So we welcome you all to Srila Prabhupada's Western World Headquarters on the auspicious occasion of Sri Ram Navami, the appearance day of the personality of Godhead, Sri Ramachandra. Continuing the theme of the messages being sent out from the temple in connection with Ram Navami, we shall try to understand the characteristics and pastimes of Lord Ramachandra through Hanuman and his associates, as described in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so I have chosen a verse from the prayers of Hanuman to Lord Ram from the fifth canto, chapter 19. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 5. Please repeat. Martya Avatara Tu Iha Martya Shikshanam Raksha Vadaya Eva Na Kevalam Vibho Kutaha Anyata Syat Ramata Sve Atmana Sita Kritani Vyasanani Ishvarasya. Martyasya Vatara Striha Martya Sikshanam. Raksho Vadayai Vana Kevalam Vibho.
Raksho Vadayai Vana Kevalam Vibho.
Kutonyata Syad Ramata Sva Atmana.
Kutonyata Syad Ramata Sva Atmana.
Sita Kritani Vyasana Vyasana Nishvarasya. Martya Vatara Striha Martya Shikshanam. Raksho Vadayai Vana Kevalam Vibho. Kutonyata Syad Ramata Sva Atmana. Sita Kritani Vyasanani śvarasya Martya. As a human being, avatara, whose incarnation to however iha in the material world martya shikshanam, for teaching all the living entities, especially human beings, Rakshavadaya, to kill the demon Ravana, Eva, certainly, not Kevalam, only, Vibho, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kutaha, from where, Anyata, otherwise, Syat, there would be, Ramata, of one enjoying, Sve, in himself, Atmanaha, the spiritual identity of the universe, Sita, of the wife of Lord Ramachandra, Kritani, appearing due to the separation, Vyasanani, all the miseries, Ishvarasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. It was ordained that Ravana, chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? Please repeat. It was ordained that Ravana, chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead. And nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else should he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the Lord appears in this universe in the form of a human being, he has two purposes, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkritam. To destroy the demons and protect the devotees. To protect the devotees, the Lord not only satisfies them by his personal presence, but also teaches them so that they will not fall down from devotional service. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra taught the devotees that it is better not to enter married life, which is certainly followed by many tribulations. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45, Yanmai tunadi grihamedi sukham hitu cham kandu yanena karayor ivadu kadu kham tripyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhaja kandu tivan manasijam vishahe tadhira. Kripanas, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge and who are therefore just the opposite of brahmanas, generally take to family life, which is a concession for sex. Thus they enjoy sex again and again, although sex is followed by many tribulations. This is a warning to devotees. To teach this lesson to devotees and to human society in general, Lord Sri Ramachandra, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, underwent a series of tribulations because he accepted a wife, Mother Sita. Lord Ramachandra underwent these austerities, of course, only to instruct us. Actually, he never has any reason to lament for anything. Another aspect of the Lord's instructions is that one who accepts a wife must be a faithful husband and give her full protection. Human society is divided into two classes of men: those who strictly follow the religious principles, and those who are devotees. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra wanted to instruct both of them how to fully adopt the discipline of the religious system and how to be a beloved and dutiful husband. Otherwise, he had no reason to undergo apparent tribulations. One who strictly follows religious principles must not neglect to provide all facilities for the complete protection of his wife. There may be some suffering because of this, but one must nevertheless endure it. That is the duty of a faithful husband. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra demonstrated this duty. Lord Ramachandra could have produced hundreds and thousands of Sitas from his pleasure energy, but just to show the duty of a faithful husband, he not only rescued Sita from the hands of Ravana, but also killed Ravana and all the members of his family. Another aspect of the teachings of Lord Ramachandra is that although Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his devotees may apparently suffer from material tribulations, they have nothing to do with such tribulations. There are many mukta purushas, liberated persons under all circumstances. It is therefore said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Yatra deka vaishnavera vyavahara dukha nischaya janiha taha paramananda sukha. A Vaishnava is always firmly situated in transcendental bliss because of engagement in devotional service. Although he may appear to suffer material pains, his position is called transcendental bliss in separation, viraha. The emotions a lover and beloved feel when separated from one another are actually very blissful, although apparently painful. Therefore, the separation of Lord Ramachandra from Sita Devi, as well as the consequent tribulation they suffered, is but another display of transcendental bliss. That is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Translation again. It was ordained that Ravana, chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? Hare Krishna. So this verse, which describes Lord Ramachandra's appearance as a human being, can be understood on many levels. It was ordained that Ravana could be killed by no one but a man. Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And as we know from the story of Hiranyakashipu, who performed severe austerities to get boons from Lord Brahma, and who wanted to become immortal by such boons, he asked for so many boons, not to be killed during the day or night, not to be killed inside of a building or outside, not to be killed on the land, in the sky, or on the water, not to be killed by any demigod or human being or animal. He asked for so many boons, and Lord Brahma granted them all. But still, he could not become immortal, because the Lord appeared as Nrisimhadeva, not a human being, not a demigod, not an animal, and killed him in such a way that he kept intact all of the boons granted by Brahma and still killed Hiranyakashipu. So Ravana and Srila Prabhupada commented, yes, because one of the conditions was that he would not be killed by any weapon. But he wasn't killed by any weapon. He was killed by the nails of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada comments that that Hiranyakasipu was thinking only of the nuclear bomb, to protect himself from the nuclear bomb. But he couldn't imagine that he could be killed by nails. Ravana was similar. He took many boons not to be killed, but he was so proud that he did not include being granted the boon not to be killed by a human being. Because he thought, human being? Human being? How could a human being kill me? It didn't even enter his mind that he could be killed by a human being. And so that was the only, you could say, loophole in his plan. And so the Lord appeared as a human being and killed him. But he appeared as a human being not only to kill Ravana, he appeared as a human being for other reasons. And one was to show us human beings some important facts, to teach us some important lessons. And the first lesson, as mentioned in the purport, is that if one is too attached to family life, husband to a wife, wife to a husband, one suffers greatly. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the description of scheduled incarnations with specific functions, there's a brief description of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and the same point comes there. And in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two full chapters that are a complete summary of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, or Ramayana. And there also the point is discussed in great detail the suffering that Lord Ramachandra apparently underwent due to separation from his wife, Sita Devi. And it is a lesson. It is a lesson that for a man to be attached to his wife, and for a woman to be attached to her husband, leads to great suffering. In fact, it is said that that suffering due to that attachment is the greatest suffering in the material world. No suffering can compare to it. So that's one level of understanding. And it might seem it might seem odd that I'm speaking on this verse to an audience that is mainly householders. It wasn't the scheduled verse. Sometimes we get a verse and we think, oh, why did I have to get that verse? Because it discusses a delicate subject. But I chose this. No one forced me. Well, other than maybe some superior authorities. The reason is that it's not so much a matter of whether one is in Grihastha ashram or not, but it is a matter of the consciousness. It's a matter of the consciousness. If we enter Grihastha ashram in the mood of finding a situation that is appropriate for us or suitable for us to make further advancement in Krishna consciousness, then we don't have to reject it. But if we enter it with the false idea as described Yan mai tunadi griyamedi sukham hi tucham, that happiness is going to satisfy us, then we will suffer. It is just, it's the law of nature. You cannot escape it. The more you want to enjoy material happiness, the more you have to suffer material miseries. It's just the law of nature. You can't escape it. So that is the deeper lesson here, that one should not be in any illusion that the so-called material happiness of spiritual life, of family life, will satisfy one. And that in the verse from the seventh canto quoted in the purport, Chipyanti neha. Chipta means to be satisfied, and neha means they're not satisfied. And everyone knows it. I mean, anyone who has tried to get satisfaction in that way knows that there is no real satisfaction. It just doesn't work. Because we're not the body. We are the soul within the body. And so, because we're not the body, we're actually separate from the body, which is made of senses and mind. We can't be happy by the interaction of the senses of the body with the objects of the senses. It's a very simple point which has profound implications. And therefore, Prabhupada gave many examples. One is of the bird in the cage. You may have a bird in a cage, and you may the cage may be made of gold. You might polish the the golden bars of the cage and put all sorts of nice cushions covered with silk in the cage and throw precious gems and jewels everywhere. But if you don't feed the bird, will the bird be happy?
No.
That beautifully decorated and ornamented and aromatic cage is not going to give any satisfaction to the bird, because the bird will be hungry. And if you don't feed the bird eventually will just die. So the soul is like the bird, and the body is like the cage. So we may do everything for the body. We may get a nice apartment with nice cushions and nice furniture and decorate it, scent it. But if we don't feed the soul, we'll not be happy, will not be satisfied, and spiritually we will die. So the sustenance for the soul, the food for the soul, is its relationship with the Supreme Soul, which is established by Bhakti Yoga, hearing and chanting and remembering and so on. That is our nourishment, that is our sustenance. So when those activities are prominent in any situation, including Grihastha Ashram, then we are not really in the material world, we are in the spiritual world, or as good as being in the spiritual world, because we are absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And even a famous authority on marriage, who has written books, and I imagine on a certain level he's helped many couples in their relationships with each other, he has commented that the purpose of married life is not to be happy. The purpose of married life, you know, being married in the truest sense of the term, is to create a situation in which the individuals can find their own happiness. And that understanding is very much the understanding of Krishna consciousness, that we have a certain psychophysical constitution or needs, and so being married, it may be the most suitable situation for us, but it won't make us happy. It's just a situation in which we're meant to find our own happiness, which is Krishna consciousness. Now, so that's one instruction. Then another instruction is that, okay, it's better to avoid it, but most people can't or don't. So, okay, they enter it, and then they find so many troubles that they didn't anticipate. And then they might think, oh, this is too much of a bother. This is just too much of a bother. And they want to renounce, like renunciation in the mode of passion. because something is too troublesome, you want to renounce it. So here is another lesson. Why Lord Ramachandra appeared as a human being, to teach us that if we do enter Grihastha Ashram, we must be responsible. Husband must be responsible and take all care to protect the wife under all circumstances. In Vrindavan, and by the way, the beautiful Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan opened on this day, on Ram Naomi, 1975. So it's a very special day for us for that reason as well. So in Vrindavan, in Srila Prabhupada's quarters, the devotees have arranged to put a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote on that particular date on his table, on his writing table, every day. And so it's something to look forward to every day when you go into Srila Prabhupada's quarters to have darshan, an audience of his deity. You can read the letter and see what instruction is there in the letter. And just before I left Vrindavan recently, there was a long letter, one of the longest I've ever seen, like 3 full pages, in which Srila Prabhupada was writing to a husband who wanted to leave his wife in the name of taking sannyas. And Srila Prabhupada quoted a verse from the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that one should not put others into difficulty, and one should not be put into difficulty by others. So this is also a very important instruction. So he was telling the husband that you should not put your wife into difficulty by giving up your duty. But you also should not be put into difficulty by her. But actually, she's not putting you into difficulty. You are putting yourself into difficulty by not properly understanding Krishna consciousness. That it's not the situation that you're in that will make you happy or unhappy, but it's your own consciousness. It's your own execution of devotional service that will make you happy or unhappy. So it's a very instructive letter, very instructive and informative letter. So, and it's the same point. So, Bahu Dukha Bhaja, there are so many miseries, one after the other, they come. But one must do one's duty. One cannot give up one's duty just because it is troublesome. And at the same time, tolerate and be Krishna conscious. Then, there's another level, which is the spiritual understanding of Lord Rama's separation from Sita. Actually, I just thought of something sort of humorous before we go on to this next level, about the suffering of That takes place when a boy and a girl are attached to each other and then they are separated. So Vas Prabhu was telling me about a music group that was becoming Krishna conscious. They might have even performed at the Rath Yatra. And they and the lyrics to their songs are philosophical. And he was saying it's not like the songs of our generation. And then he like, I can't begin to imitate Vas Prabhu, but he very nicely sort of replicated the style of songs that we grew up with, to the effect, baby, you know I love you. Why did you leave me? Why did you break my heart? You're saying it's not like that. But I think there are a lot of songs like that, and there probably always will be, because that's what happened. So, now, okay, he's playing the part of a human being, Lord Rama, but he's not a human being. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is firmly situated on the transcendental platform. And his separation from Sita Devi is demonstrating another realm of separation, which is not painful and material, but which is spiritual and blissful, known as viraha bhav or vipralamba. And this is not only an integral part of Krishna consciousness, but ironically or paradoxically, it is actually what makes Krishna consciousness the most relishable. And that is the spiritual feelings of separation, ecstatic feelings of separation. And this is very prominent in our line. But in order to feel separation, you have to feel attachment. That's why in material relationships, there's so much suffering when a loved one, well, you know, either the couple break up or one dies or something, because of the attachment. So on the material platform, that material attachment leads to material pain, extreme. But on the spiritual platform, when we begin to become attached to Krishna, then we can have feelings of separation from Krishna. And then our spiritual progress is accelerated. Feelings of separation are a tremendous impetus to spiritual progress. And it includes Krishna and his devotees. In fact, generally it begins with one's spiritual master or other elevated devotees, that one becomes attached to them and then one feels separation from them. And in order to, you could say, overcome those feelings of separation, one serves them. That's the process, that by serving the person, one is associated with the person. By following the instructions of the spiritual master, one is associated with the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada dedicated his translation of Srimad Bhagavatam to his spiritual master. He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So we're never separated. Last January, Bhrigupati Prabhu, he had been out distributing books and then he came back. And he was scheduled to give class. And, you know, etiquette and, you know, I'm a sannyasi. But I wanted to hear him give class because he has been distributing books with tremendous enthusiasm and success for how many years? For 39 years. And I thought he must have very deep realizations. I mean, you can't go out and distribute books like that practically every day for almost 40 years without having deep realizations. So I wanted to hear his class. I wanted to hear what are his realizations. And I was not disappointed. His realizations came out in his class. But the essence of his service and you know, most of our service is service in separation. He lives forever by his divine instructions and the follower lives with him. That we live with Srila Prabhupada, we live with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we live with the whole parampara, with Sri Sri Gaur Nitai, with the six Goswamis, through service in separation. And this feeling of bliss and separation can be experienced even on our platform. Very early in maybe 1968, one of Prabhupada's disciples, Uddhava, wrote to Srila Prabhupada saying he was feeling separation from him. And Srila Prabhupada told him that you must follow my instructions. And by following my instructions, the feelings of separation will transform into transcendental bliss. So, when Bhrigupati Prabhu, or so many others, is distributing books, he's feeling bliss. Can't do something like that day after day for almost 40 years without some taste, without some relish. He's feeling bliss. And every book distributor experiences it. They feel Prabhupada's presence, they feel his mercy, and along with it, they feel bliss. They feel ecstasy. I know often I felt the greatest bliss when I was in the most difficult material circumstances. Because if we're in a comfortable situation, in a pleasant situation, the question could arise, am I here for my sense gratification or am I really here for service? But when you're in a situation that is materially difficult, you know you're not there for your sense gratification. You know you're there to serve Srila Prabhupada. Once I had gone very far north in Calcutta. This was 1971. And I don't know now, but in those days, Calcutta didn't have much of a sewage system. And it was the monsoon season, and that particular day it was just pouring rain. And the rain had nowhere to go. There were no drains. I mean, there were, in some parts of the city, there were drains, but they very quickly filled up and overflowed. And I think where I was, in far north Calcutta, they didn't even have drains. So the water on the street just kept rising and rising. And as it is, it was a little remote. And because the streets were so full of water, people were not driving. And the rickshaw drivers, in any case, they're not that interested in customers. And Srila Prabhupada explains the reason is, this is general Indian mentality, it might be changed somewhat, but general Indian mentality is that they're not very interested in working for economic development. But they are very eager in spiritual advancement. I saw it the first time I went to the charity commissioner's office in Bombay. I could not believe it. I could not believe the quantity of work that was not being done. It was staggering. There are so many desks with, bureaucrats, and no one was working. Reading the newspaper, drinking tea, chatting. I couldn't believe it. But then I heard how Prabhupada explained that they're just not interested in material advancement. But these same people, they'll go to Allahabad for the Kumbh Mela, they'll get up at 3:30 in the morning, they'll walk in the freezing cold, take bath in the confluence of the Ganges and Yamuna. So the rickshaw drivers are the same. It's so often you see them asleep on the rickshaw, and especially if it's raining. They just pull the hood down and take rest comfortably. So here I am, far north Calcutta, the temple's in south Calcutta. It's pouring rain. There's no rickshaw drivers. I'm sure they've all pulled their hoods down and are asleep. Taxi drivers aren't driving. Nobody's going out. And once in a while, there'd be a lone taxi seeing the distance, get all excited, but it's like full. There's no empty taxis driving around. And somehow in the midst of that, I started to feel bliss. I started to feel bliss because why was I there? I was just there to serve Srila Prabhupada. And just thinking that and thinking that he would be pleased with my efforts, even though I wasn't really doing anything except enduring the hardships. I felt bliss. I was like in bliss. The water was rising, almost got to my knees. I was soaking wet, but I felt blissful because I was there for Prabhupada and he was happy. I was trying to serve him and he was happy, and that was all that mattered. So in any circumstance, as long as we are engaged in service and thinking of our master whom we're trying to please, we can be happy. It doesn't matter. And as Srila Prabhupada says, this is true of the Lord, that he's always happy, and it's also true of the pure devotee. He's always happy. And even if externally he appears to be suffering some tribulation, but internally he's happy. Very early in the movement, one of the devotees, I think an artist, she was going through photos of Srila Prabhupada looking for subjects to paint. And very early, 26 Second Avenue, and it's kind of a very small family. So she said, "Srila Prabhupada, you look so sad in that photo." And Prabhupada said, "That was a moment of transcendental bliss." And then there was another time, we were in Surat, and Srila Prabhupada seemed to be like quite sick with cold and runny nose and watering eyes and everything, like somebody has a bad cold or allergy. And so the devotees, they were sort of in a protective mood that, you know, he shouldn't go out because Prabhupada would have preaching programs every day. Nothing could stop him. They were really in a protective mood that, you know, you shouldn't go out. You know, you have to take care. And Prabhupada was insisting. And he commented, "They do not know what is transcendental ecstasy." Now, that could be taken in different ways. I just took it that he's a Gaustiyanandi. He experiences ecstasy when he preaches and brings others to Krishna. Although some devotees said they thought he was referring to those watery eyes and runny nose. Those are symptoms of ecstasy. But in any case, it was ecstasy. And so Lord Ramachandra's apparent suffering and separation from Sita was only external. But internally, he was relishing spiritual bliss. There is a story, I imagine from the Puranas, that Lord Shiva and Parvati, they were in the forest when Lord Ramachandra came through in that mood of lamentation that Sita is gone, Sita is gone, Sita is gone, where is Sita, where is Sita? And Parvati had some misconception that Rama is lamenting like an ordinary person. He's lamenting like an ordinary person. And so she came to her husband, Lord Shiva, and told him what she saw, and she said, this isn't right for him to feel so much lamentation. And, you know, Lord Shiva said that actually he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's always in transcendental bliss. This is just an external manifestation. And Sita, Parvati said, I don't know. Now, I don't know if what you're saying is true. I am going to test him. And Lord Shiva said, please don't do that. Please don't do that. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you would be making a mistake. But she was headstrong. And so she, because she's Parvati, she's Durga, she's the material energy, she's very powerful. So she assumed the form of Sita Devi, exactly like Sita Devi. And she appeared before Lord Ram. And Lord Ram totally ignored her. Where is Sita? Where is Sita? Oh, where is Sita? And then, by his mystic power, he created innumerable Sita Devis. Like Prabhupada writes in the purport, if he wanted to, he could create hundreds and thousands of Sitas. He didn't need to feel lamentation for Sita. So Ram actually did that. He created hundreds and thousands of Sitas, and wherever Parvati looked, she saw Sita. It's another Sita, another Sita, another Sita. Then she realized the wisdom of her husband's words, and in a very sort of contrite and repentant and ashamed way, she returned home. So, okay, one level is he's showing us, human beings, the plight of a man who's too attached to his wife, how he suffers when separated from her. But he's also showing that the ecstasy of separation can actually be greater than the ecstasy of meeting. And this is a very confidential mystery, especially in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And this topic is discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that the ecstasy of separation is even greater than the ecstasy of meeting. It's an intricate spiritual topic that we can't discuss in too much detail. But in brief, Srila Sanatan Goswami gives the example of fire in ice. That ice is cold by definition, but if it becomes very cold and you touch it, you get burned. It's exceedingly cold, but it burns. And there's dry ice. Dry ice is ice that is so cold that it smokes. The smoke comes out. When the devotees produced the Radha Krishna Temple album on Apple Records with George Harrison, and they were getting a lot of invitations to perform, so they were invited to a television program in Amsterdam with Srila Prabhupada. And so they wanted to create this sort of mystic aura of Srila Prabhupada and the disciples on the stage in front of the television cameras. So they brought out dry ice to create this smoky, mystical smoky effect. So, anyway. But it's like that. It's like something, when it gets, it's so cold it burns. So Sanatana Goswami gives the example when the feelings of separation become so intense, it becomes the opposite. It becomes meeting. And one actually relishes meeting with one's beloved, even in the apparent separation. And he gives the evidence that the residents of Vrindavan, they could have gone to be with Krishna. He went to Mathura. Mathura is not that far from Vrindavan. Why didn't they go to Mathura? Why didn't they go to Dwarka? Because internally they were relishing the ecstasy of meeting even more than if they were with him personally. Of course, Vrindavan is Vrindavan. There's the Jamuna River, there's Govardhan Hill, there's other features of Vrindavan that make associating with Krishna in Vrindavan more relishable. But the association with Krishna in separation itself is more relishable. And that's why Krishna left Vrindavan. Some people might wonder, why did he leave Vrindavan? The residents of Vrindavan love him more than any other devotees. And it's natural and it's true according to the science of Rus that one will be in that place where one is loved most. So why did Krishna leave and why did he not go back? The answer is that he knew that in separation the gopis and other Vrajavasis would relish more ecstasy than when he was personally present. So this is very confidential and mysterious, but it is so important for us. And when we can actually experience that, even on our level, you know, whatever it is, book distribution, college preaching, deity worship, cooking, teaching the children, cleaning the toilets, whatever it is, feeling that connection, that I'm doing this for Prabhupada, I'm doing it for Krishna, I'm doing it for the devotees, and experiencing their reciprocation internally. And that will allow us to continue day after day, month after month, year after year. I was very glad when I walked into the temple room this morning. I saw one of my god sisters, who I hadn't seen for a long time, sitting and chanting japa. And I thought, and seriously, you could tell, you know, trying to chant and hear. And I thought, how wonderful. After 40 years or whatever, it is still continuing. And so many God brothers and God sisters who are here, after so many years, one could say, well, you know, we met Prabhupada when we were probably 20, about 20, and we didn't have so much experience of life when we met him. We didn't really know what to expect as we grew older, although I think that's true of everyone who's 20. But still, now 40 years later, still chanting, still serving. And I thought of Prabhupada's potency, because what he did, preaching Krishna consciousness outside India to people with no background of Vedic culture, was never done before. I mean, that was a big question, whether anyone would even take to Krishna consciousness. And then if they did take, how long they would last. So it's a great testimony to Srila Prabhupada's potency that after 40 years, he's still chanting, still serving. And I tried to imagine what Srila Prabhupada, I mean, we can't, but what he was thinking, what he was feeling when he came. And sometimes he gives the example of throwing seeds. Like, you just throw seeds on the soil and you don't know where they're going to land, what seed is going to take root, what's not going to, but you just do it. And you hope that some will take root. And so that's true, that's certainly true, but it struck me as a little impersonal. Not really impersonal, but there is no personal interest contained in that particular example or analogy. But I was thinking of these devotees, whether they were, you know, during Prabhupada's presence, whether they had a lot of personal association or not, whether they were so-called big devotees or not. But each and every one had a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada. He had a personal relationship with them. It was very personal. And then I thought of a Talmudic saying. Talmud is a Hebrew commentary or discussion of the Bible. There's a statement in the Talmud that every blade of grass has an angel hovering over it saying, "Grow, grow." And so I thought of Srila Prabhupada that, okay, he went everywhere, he performed kirtan, he spoke Bhagavad Gita, he was throwing seeds. But he was also that angel who was hovering over each little blade of grass that took root from a seed and was saying, "Grow, grow." And what mercy. I mean, we talk about, you know, more humble than a blade of grass. Grass is very insignificant. That's what we are, less than a blade of grass. But still, Prabhupada is with each and every one of us. Grow, grow, keep going, don't give up. I'm with you, I'll help you. Hare Krishna. Oh, thank you very much. There's another talk tomorrow in which I'll feature more on the pastimes of Ram. But because you're like a more advanced group, so I spoke about more difficult topics. But Sunday at the public celebration, we'll talk more about the pastimes and a way that will be more relevant to a larger audience. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.